Thank you very much, Provost Rosenbaum. Welcome to all of you, and congratulations on your terrific accomplishments. This day is by right about you, about what you've achieved over the last few years and throughout your lives. Now, of course, if it's really all about you, some of you might ask, why is it that this ceremony doesn't look much like the events that you all will have for your own celebrations when you're on your own time? When you have your own parties, you probably won't dress up in these gowns, for example, unless you have some kind of Harry Potter thing going on, in which case, I'll just stop there. You won't march in a nice procession. I doubt you'll be lucky enough to have bagpipers playing for you. And you won't set yourselves up to listen to vaguely finger-wagging speeches by people like me. But all of these are integral parts of our convocation, and why is that? Well, one reason is that while this event is about you, it's also about your connection to some other people. Most important are the families and friends who are here today, here in the audience, or even if they couldn't be in the audience, here with you in a profound way, as your families and friends have been with you all along, even if they were not by your side. And then there is your connection to the people who have sat where you're sitting in the years and decades before you, and who have established the communities of students and scholars and professionals into which in a few minutes you will be welcomed by President Zimmer. We can all name a half dozen very successful businesses that were startups a few years ago, but you'll have a hard time finding an equally successful startup university. Among the great universities of the world, the one from which you're about to get your degree is very much a new kid on the block, and this new kid on the block, the University of Chicago, is 120 years old. Great academic communities like the one to which all of you belong are the work of many generations, and this ceremony ratifies your connection to them. Now, the tradition at our convocation is for the speaker to talk about his or her academic work. And my subject, the law, is like families and like universities, something built over many generations. When you work with the law or study the law, part of what you're doing is to pick through the good and the bad that other generations and our own generation have given to us. My own area, constitutional law, deals with the foundational institutions of our government. This is an area in which, if I can corrupt Faulkner's aphorism, the past may or may not be dead, but it is definitely still with us. Take, for example, the idea that we will solve our problems if only we can get back to the principles of our founders. You see that idea in lots of places, in religion and in schools and even in corporations, but you see it all the time when people talk about government and the Constitution. It takes the extreme form of people dressing up like George Washington at rallies about healthcare reform and things like that. But among people on all sides of the important debates about the Constitution, it's practically a reflex to invoke the people who founded our country as authorities on how we should solve our present day problems. We often call them the founding fathers as if they were literally our parents. But relationships with parents can be complicated. And one of the great lessons of the last two centuries of our history is just how complicated our relationship to our founding generations is. The idea that the answer to our problems lies in somehow getting back to the founding principles, getting back to the way things used to be before it all went wrong, that's not a good way to think about a society any more than it's a good way to try to live your life. Let's consider for a moment what our country looked like when it was founded. It was a small, agrarian nation clinging to the Atlantic seaboard. The population of the entire country then was 4 million, which is less than half the population of metropolitan Chicago alone today. 5% of the people lived in urban areas then. Today that number is 75%. The population was different from today in other respects too, of course, including the fact that 700,000 people were enslaved. Forget the internet or telecommunications or antibiotics or heavier-than-air flight. The internal combustion engine was essentially unknown, and the electric light bulb had not been invented. Freedom of religion was a relatively new idea, far from universally accepted. The question whether people could be put in jail for criticizing the government was up for grabs. Racial equality was a fringe notion at best, as was the idea that women were equal to men. So to try to go back to those earlier times for answers to today's problems seems like a pretty unpromising way to go. In fact, it's worse than unpromising. Those earlier periods are so different, and the issues have changed so much, that the deeper problem is that we will look into this essentially inscrutable past and see what we want to see. If you admire the founders of our country and think they were wise and brilliant, which in many ways they were, then of course you're going to want to conclude that they had sensible views, which is to say, the same views that you have about the issues that really matter to you. There's a real danger here, the danger in the familiar phrase of arrogance disguised as humility. If you believe that you're speaking with the authentic voice of the founders instead of just defending your own views, then it's easy to escape the obligation to be self-critical. That's a cardinal obligation in the world of ideas, as everyone associated with this university in particular knows very well. It's pretty important in one's personal life. And for people exercising power, the failure or inability to be self-critical is a fatal temptation. If you convince yourself that you're just faithfully transmitting the principles of the founders and that the people on the other side of the debate are apostates, then it is much too easy to get carried away with your own rectitude. But if we're not going to get all our answers from the founders, we also can't just make things up as we go along without paying any attention to what earlier generations have done. That, as I said, seems to me to be one of the messages of this ceremony. And as far as the law is concerned, that kind of unlimited exercise of will, making up new rules as you go along, I guess it's fine if you're playing Calvin ball with the comic strip characters, but it's the antithesis of what a legal system is supposed to do. It's also impossible. We're stuck with what went before, like it or not, and the idea that we can disregard it completely is the equal and opposite fantasy to the idea that we'll get our answers from the founding fathers. It's just as arrogant and just as inadequate. Immaturity can take the form of thinking that your parents will solve all your problems. It can also take the form of thinking that you don't have anything to learn from anyone else. It's kind of a cliche that that's true of individuals, but sometimes our debates in law and politics seem to oscillate between those two forms of immaturity too. If you look at the actual history of the Constitution in our country and in many other countries as well, what you see is something more complicated. What you see in the law, as you see in the lives of individuals, is an ongoing process of trial and error, of learning by experience, of messing things up, and then trying to learn the lessons from what we did wrong. The law has permitted, even required, injustice in our history, slavery and discrimination, intolerance and oppression. But to its credit, the law has also fostered a process of learning from those terrible mistakes, identifying what went wrong, trying to remedy the wrong, doing what we can to make sure that that same kind of thing does not happen in the future. That process, too, has false starts and blind alleys, false dawns and relapses, as well as unmistakable progress. Let me give you just one example. At various times in U.S. history, the government has put people in jail just for expressing unpopular opinions about politics. These episodes range from the Alien and Sedition Acts of the 1790s to various Red Scares in more recent times. In response, we have built up a set of legal rules to try to prevent things like that from happening again. The government can't punish political speech, no matter how extreme or how damaging, except in truly extraordinary circumstances. Public officials have to accept the risk that their reputations will be unfairly attacked. If government secrets are leaked to a newspaper, the government may be able to punish the leaker, but it can almost never stop the newspaper from publishing. These are just examples. There are other rules, and there are qualifications and complexities. But the point is that these rules weren't handed down to us by the founders, and they also did not just occur to some enlightened judge in a flash of inspiration. They've been hammered out over decades. They are the hard-won lessons of our past mistakes. They've changed shape, as we've tried some rules out, stuck with them if they seemed to work, and modified or scrapped them if they didn't. No one thinks these rules are perfect in all their particulars, and I'm sure we would argue among ourselves about where these rules fall short and where they go too far. But those are the kinds of arguments we should have. Coming of age in the law, like coming of age in an individual, is not a matter of denying that you are in part what others have made you. Of course, we all are. And it's also not a matter of thinking that others have the magic answer book that will solve your problems. It's a matter of sorting through your heritage, valuing what should be valued, criticizing what should be criticized, being open to the claims of the past, while being determined to do better. So, that's my vaguely finger-wagging advice to you. I hope you've learned a lot from us in your years here, but most of all, I hope you've learned how to do better than we have done. Good luck to you all, and the warmest congratulations.